another national lockdown, but for almost 10 months we've been in the east of England and have already been extended to another region in Wales. The different regions face different rules, but they mean that currently a third of people living in Scotland are under some form of lockdown, a quarter of those in Northern Ireland, and one in eight of those in England and Wales. Here's how the Health Secretary explained the reasons for the new restrictions in the North East in the House of Commons about an hour ago.
We've seen concerning rates of infection in parts of the North East. Sunderland, for example, now has an incidence rate of 103 positive cases per 100,000 population. And in South Tyneside, Gateshead and Newcastle, the figures are all above 70. As a result, local authorities wrote to me earlier this week asking for tighter restrictions, and we've taken swift action to put them in place. From tomorrow, in Northumberland, North Tyneside, South Tyneside, Newcastle-upon-Tyne, Gateshead, Sunderland and County Durham, residents should not socialise with other people outside their own households or support bubble. Hospitality for food and drink will be restricted to table service only, and late night restrictions of operating hours will be introduced, so leisure and entertainment venues must close between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m.
Well, we're still waiting to hear the official guidance on who will be allowed to get a test. Ministers have said that NHS staff, care homes and teachers will have priority until capacity is increased. And the government this morning announced a new industrial-scale lighthouse laboratory at Baltic Park in Gateshead, which could process up to 80,000 tests per day. But that's not expected to come online for some months. And there are thousands not able to get tests at the moment, which is why Labour's shadow health spokesman, John Ashworth, asked this.
Rather than fixing testing, the Secretary of State is restricting testing. In the exchanges on Tuesday, 33 members from across the House raised issues around testing in their constituencies. He responded with the local figures. It was a very good debating trick. Well done to the Special Advisor for producing the briefing. But it will be no comfort to our constituents who are advised to travel hundreds of miles for a test when ill. It's no comfort to parents with a poorly child, themselves sick with worry, unable to get a test. It's no comfort to those who are turned away from walking centres and now are presenting at A&E asking for a test. It's no comfort to the 25,000 teaching staff who are not in schools teaching our children because they can't get a test. What people want to know is when this Secretary of State will fix testing and deliver on his promise that testing is available to everyone.
Jonathan Ashworth this morning. Well, our North of England correspondent Fiona Trott is in Newcastle at the moment. And Fiona, how has this announcement of the regional lockdown gone down there?
Well, what's clear is that it's targeting bars, restaurants and clubs. That's for sure. Council leader here will say not a lockdown. They are measures to avoid a full lockdown, of course. But a lot of these clubs and bars have had to close here in the northeast already and be deep cleaned, especially in South Tyneside, where, you know, recent figures suggest there have been 93 positive cases per 100,000 people. But that 10 o'clock curfew at night is going to hit businesses here hard. I spoke to one bar owner here in Newcastle earlier. He said that he's at his busiest after 10 o'clock at night. And, of course, this is in a city where the nighttime economy is said to be worth around £340 million a year to Newcastle. I've spoken to people here in and around the city to get their reaction. Most of them do understand that they want to avoid a full lockdown and say they will follow the new rules.
It's spreading, isn't it? Just one of them things. You've just got to put up with it, haven't you?
People need to get out of work. People need to go to college. You can't just stop life because the virus is slowly creeping back up. Just enforce these face masks and social distancing more.
Just have to obey the rules. Not hard work, is it? Come with the flu. It's got to be done. It's got to be done.
I think it should be imposed, but not as much as they are. I think it should just close down pubs, clubs, things like that, because that's the only way it's been spread. The blame's been to put more on young people. Equally, I see people in their 40s, 50s not wearing face masks with their nose hanging out, and they've also gone to pubs as well.
Oh, Fiona Trott in Newcastle, thank you. We had the latest assessment of how Test and Trace in England has been working this morning, at least in the week until the 9th of September, and that was before the challenges, of course, this week when it became almost impossible to book a test online. They show only a third of people got their results back within 24 hours of taking a test. That was half the rate of the previous week. The number testing positive in England jumped by 75%. Sebastian Funk is Associate Professor and Director of the Centre for the Mathematical Modelling of Infectious Diseases at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And he took us through the numbers, which seem to be steadily increasing across the country.
The pattern that we're seeing is that cases are increasing everywhere, and hospitalizations, new admissions to hospital, are increasing everywhere. So we have a nationwide picture of an increase in infections. At the same time, we're seeing that there are certain areas where this has been going on for longer, perhaps, and is accelerating more rapidly. And that is where I think the government is focusing with these local lockdowns.
Okay. Is there any area where restrictions over recent weeks have made a difference?
In general, it's difficult to tell, because we have a mixture of restrictions. At the same time, we have changes in policy. We have, in most of the country, schools reopening. And so it's extremely difficult to tease these things apart, because there's always multiple things happening at the same time.
But the numbers that you're looking at the moment, everything's going in the wrong direction.
Indeed, yes. At the moment, we're not seeing any evidence of any slowdown. And bear in mind that this is, we're seeing numbers with usually at least a two-week delay or so, depending on what exactly we're looking at, whether we're looking at cases or hospitalizations, or then deaths are even more delayed. So we're not seeing any changes in deaths yet, but we're expecting that to pick up.
Well, soon. I wanted to ask you about that, because obviously you'll know a lot of people are pointing to that and saying, look, it's different this time. We're not seeing the deaths. Is it just because there's a lag, or does it look to be slightly different this time, if only because we have better treatments and a better knowledge of the disease?
Yeah, that is probably happening. And what we can see is that the death rates in hospitals have decreased since the peak, partly probably because hospitals were overwhelmed then. It might also be that the admission criteria are less strict than they were in March and April, when things were looking very worrying indeed. However, it's still a substantial proportion of those that arrive in hospital that die, but that happens with a delay. That can take 3 weeks, 4 weeks, up to 6 weeks. And so now that we're seeing hospitalizations picking up significantly, I would be very surprised if we didn't see that filter through in death. It's just the most lagged indicator that we have, death.
When will we know if the rule of six is working? Is working to turn things round rather than just stop them getting worse?
It'll take at least 2 to 3 weeks until we know. And bear in mind that this rule came in on Monday, and so we would expect the numbers for cases and hospitalizations to keep going up for another 2 weeks or so, just catching up with the infections that happened before then. And then we'll know whether things start turning around.
Do all these judgments that need to be made depend on testing working at scale, and indeed tracing working?
Absolutely, yeah. And we do have the indicator of hospitalizations, which is fairly reliable. The other thing compared to February and March that's important to bear in mind is that infections are rising much slower. So we do see a lower reproduction number than we did then. So the changes in behavior that have happened since then have almost certainly had an impact. So the additional reduction that we need in order to bring things under control is perhaps not as great as it was then. And that's where the hope comes from, that these recent changes in policy that have come in, or perhaps other adjustments that can be made to that in combination with a functioning track and trace system, can turn things around and bring about a decline in cases and infections.
Professor Sebastian Funk. Lucy Yardley is a professor of health psychology at Bristol University and sits on the government's SAGE behaviour subgroup. I asked her how the public's behaviour has changed in recent weeks.
We've been seeing lower levels of infection nationally. Everybody's let their guard down a bit. That's really right from the top to the bottom. And we've had a lot of encouragement to people to resume activity in all sorts of ways. I think there was a national experiment, and we have learned that, unfortunately, we are going to all have to be more careful.
What are your thoughts about the way that they're handling this rise in infection? Because we're obviously seeing a different approach taken in different areas. Is there an argument that actually restrictions across the country, perhaps mild restrictions, would be more effective and would be better received?
I do think that having different restrictions in lots of different places is confusing for people. So you can certainly see an argument, especially now that the virus seems to be circulating more widely anyway, that it might be easier, simpler and more equitable to have more general restrictions. Rather than sort of quickly saying, everybody do this, we really need to plan ahead what actions we're all going to be able to take to work together to beat this.
You're on SAGE. What do you say about how they should be presenting this message?
We have given advice regularly about messaging that it needs to give a very clear, consistent rationale, not just for what people should do, but why that is going to be helpful, why it's fair, how they should do it.
Right, so clear, consistent rationale. What would be your judgment on how the government's done on that?
I think the messaging has got very complex. It keeps changing. It's also different for different areas, for different organisations. Really, the key messages are actually very simple and can apply everywhere. In terms of reducing our risk to ourselves and other people, we just need to do our best to not share the same air with other people more than we have to, and not touch them or the surfaces that they touch more than we have to. Now, everybody can work out for their own situation and the many situations they go through how to apply those two principles, which are very simple.
The SAGE group concluded that less than 20% of people in England fully self-isolated when they were asked to do so. There does seem to be a problem with people following the advice that they need to go home and stay home.
It isn't the case that 80% of people are just saying, I don't think it's necessary for me to self-isolate, or I don't want to. What we've seen is that the reasons for not self-isolating are very reasonable ones, really. For some people, it's that they absolutely have to go to work because they can't afford not to. For some people, it's the psychological impact, and all they are doing, or they report, is maybe going out to exercise and not going near anyone, as we were actually allowed to do in the later stages of lockdown.
So the pilot, where they're paid £13 a day as a financial incentive, that's not enough money?
Well, financial incentive isn't the right idea, because the idea is not to incentivize people by paying them. It's to make sure that they actually simply have enough income to live on. And for most people, I doubt that that would be enough to live on.
Professor Lucy Yardley. Well, let's look at that pilot, because it's been 3 weeks since the government announced that payment for people on low incomes having to self-isolate at £13 a day. The Department of Health said the scheme would start with a trial in Blackburn with Darwen, Oldham and Pendle before being quickly rolled out to other areas in England where coronavirus cases are high, if it was successful. So has it been? Pendle Council's Liberal Democrat deputy leader and lead on COVID-19 is David Webb. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sarah.
What's your verdict on the scheme after 3 weeks?
I'm afraid it's a bit of a failure. We've had just four successful applications, and the amount of money that's on the table just really isn't sufficient compensation for people. People who may be earning several hundred pounds a week, self-employed, they're not eligible to even apply. So disappointingly, because we championed getting the isolation payments in, disappointingly, it's not working.
Okay, only four people have applied for it.
Eight applications, four of which have been refused, four of which have been approved.
And what's your understanding of whether people are self-isolating? Perhaps they're comfortable and happy with self-isolating without the payments?
Not our experience on the ground. And also, there's a Public Health England report which showed that 75% of people in isolation have been going out shopping, and that young males in particular are resistant to that self-isolation. So I think there's big issues. I mean, we depend, and your previous speakers talked about testing and tracing, we depend on test, trace and isolate. Those three legs could help contain this outbreak, but sadly all of them are falling over at the moment.
But if people who are meant to isolate are choosing not to, what do you think is required to encourage them to do so?
I think that adequate compensation, perhaps on a average earnings or a living wage or a jewellery service type basis, would help. So the existing scheme, but at a realistic level, would certainly help. And then the other thing is, going back to the understanding, people need to appreciate it's person-to-person contact that is causing the problems, and how important it is for people to avoid that close personal contact with others, and how that helps to disrupt the virus and prevent it from spreading.
Do people not understand that? Honestly,
given that the reaction, and don't forget we've been at the sharp end for 2 months now with this, people on the ground are rebelling against the restrictions. I don't think we should have additional restrictions. I think the simple messages should get through, and we should support people in being able to live the lives in a way which is safe and helps protect others.
Okay, but for those that you talk about rebelling, are they, I mean, what, do they just refuse to comply with social distancing? They just choose not, they don't want to live their lives like that?
I think that would be too much of a simplification. I think you've got a whole different series of people, and they have different reasons why they don't think that being compliant is necessary. And it could be rebellion, or it could be necessity, and it could be the fact that they need to put food on the table. It could be the fact that they need to have some interaction with the family for whatever reason. So I think there's a multiplicity of reasons, and I think the government and ourselves as in local government ought to be able to support those people get through those barriers that are preventing them doing the right thing by us all.
David Whipp, thank you.